Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're about to listen to an interview which our socios enjoyed in full 12 months ago. If you'd like to listen to these exclusive monthly big interviews on the day that they're released, it's time to join us. That means supporting us. It means the price of a pint per month. Go to Patreon, patreon.com/GrahamHunter. Go now, join and become a socio. That means you'll get that extra big interview every month, and you'll also unlock our entire archive straight away, all for £2.99 a month. It's the best deal in town, baby, and we need you. I noticed Kevin Caban as a professional footballer, of course I did. Anybody who displays the passion, athleticism, will to win, and technique for scoring or creating really good goals was bound to attract the attention of somebody who feels about football the way that I do. What tipped Kevin over into being an automatic invite to be a guest in the big interview was his excellence as a broadcaster. Basically, whenever you listen to Kevin, either on television or where I mostly listen to him, which is on News Talk Off the Ball, you're going to enjoy it. You're going to know more about the situation that he's assessing. He's worthwhile. Enjoy the big interview. It's there for you. And thanks for the fact that you're there for us.
Roy used to speed up and slow down the game. He had a great way of knowing how to do that, how to influence games that I'd never played with a midfielder like that before. That's why I'd still put him above all the Premier League, the so-called greats. I'd still put him above them all, even playing against him and playing with him, for how he could dictate games. And his ability probably goes unnoticed at times as well. But
so you grow aware of this stop-stop-go thing that he can do in a game as you're playing with him. You haven't experienced that before and you didn't know it, I infer from what you've been saying.
Yeah.
Do you immediately understand why he's regulating the tempo of a match or how he's doing it?
You totally understand why he's doing it, yes. You totally do. He's influencing a game that, you know, that's got him trophies there at Man United, that he's played with some great players, and this is what the great players do.
But that's not the detail of why you do it. When you regulate the tempo of a game, in his instance, with you playing, is it to give the lads a breather? Is it because you can see the other side are on the rise? Is it to lull them into a certain position in the pitch because if it goes slow and it's knocked about, you might draw them into an area? I want to know, because you said that you were appreciating seeing him doing stop, go.
Yeah, if I'm saying early on in games, he had a great way, Roy, of always passing forward. That was the first thing he always said, and I've been coached by Steve Bruce. He had it at Man United, pass forward. He used to say to everyone, pass forward. It was never a backwards or a sideways path with Roy. His first touch was pass it, get it out your feet and pass it forward. So he'd always try and get strikers into the game, always try and get them into the game quickly. So in the early stages of a game, the first 20, 25 minutes of a game, it was always first touch, pass forward with real pace and real intensity. So he'd quicken the game up so much that it was bypassing midfielders. So you mentioned the players like Van Bommel, the Seedorfs, whoever it would be.
Cocu.
They'd stand off him. they recognise his ability, right. Maybe half frightened of him as well, okay, yeah. But also mm-hmm. he bypassed him with his passing ability. And that, in turn, then would get us on the front foot. Maybe myself could get into the game, Jason, whoever it would be, Robbie, as I said before, were in the game, early on in the game. He'd get you into
Not matches. Just that the ball comes to your feet, but you know that if he's going to do that quick passing through a midfield, opposition midfield, the Ducks that day, you've got to be alert. Yeah. You've got to be on your game.
Definitely, yeah.
So and you've got before, a different mindset.
I think he recognised people's strength on the pitch and got, and said before, he got them into the game. By moving the ball quickly, I can imagine him playing with someone like, you know, the Giggses or the Sharps before him, the Kanchelskis, these lads that would have been brilliant wingers in their own right, but he would have got them into the game. He would have recognised, look, these lads can't be stuck out wide. These lads can't be passengers in game. I've got to do my bit to get these lads into matches. And that's what he did. That's what he did. It's certainly in the early stages of the game. So whether you were playing Holland or whether we were playing Andorra or Estonia in that group, it wouldn't have mattered. He would have influenced games very quickly, and that was why I think he had a huge influence over those games against Holland home and away and Portugal home and away. Yeah,
because the creative players, for however good they look when they're doing things right, you would have a foot in both camps. Athlete work or solid, clever, but also creative dribble, step over. The creative player needs to feel that they're worthwhile, that they're on the ball.
Yeah.
The more they're starved, some of them will, if not shrivel a little bit, you're likely to get less of a return.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think you want to be in the game and you don't want to be having a touch every 10 or 15 minutes. At times, some of the games that we would have been coming up against, we would have been having to defend, you kind of come in and play solidly and do a job for the team. But you want to be expressing yourself. That's how I was brought up. That was maybe was the strength in my game. And that's what he used to enhance. He used to enhance everyone within a team just by getting him into the game early.
So after his namesake robs your goal, Jason scores one of the goals of his life.
Yeah.
Against Van der Sar, who seems to be able to lie at one post and touch the other post, yet Jason curves it round him.
Yeah.
Can you remember the feeling?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I do. I remember the goal really well. It's partly because you see it back as well, but it was the play up before it. There was a lovely little 1-2s. I think it was Niall and Robbie that were all involved in it. Little one-touch, Jason playing around the corner, give and go, getting it back. Then he's on his weaker left foot. He's 25 yards out. And as you say, he's got to hit it with enough pace to get it beyond him, but he's also got to try and guide it in there because he's on his weaker foot. It could go anywhere, essentially, but it's perfect. It's a brilliant goal from a wide man's perspective. They're the sort of goals, you know, I would maybe, you know, hold up as the great goals from a wide man. Given goals around the corner, outside of my left foot, play it into a striker, check to go on the outside, come back on the inside, receive the pass and try and get your striker away. And Jason did it perfectly. And then we say we go 2-0 up in that game and totally in command of the match.
Can you sum up the mentality? Can you remember anything of what's been drilled into you or what you're thinking? Or does anybody, you included, allow themselves to look around and go, look what we're doing, can you hear the fans?
The Amsterdam Arena had the roof. It was one of the first ones, I think, around that would have had the roof, but they didn't close it, kept it open. So the pitch wasn't in great nick anyway that night as well. But I remember we didn't take our foot off the pedal for that first 45 minutes. We kept on going for them. We wanted to get more goals. We should have scored before we even got the first goal.
You put a couple on to Niall. He hit the post with one.
Yeah.
You've put a couple there for Quinny.
We did. We created quite a few chances. We created quite a few in across the course of the game. They just weren't in the match. They weren't in the match before the first goal. They get themselves back in the game, and then we take the kick off. Roy gives me the ball, and then I have a bit of a maze. I end up knocking it. The old Stanley Matthews one. Knock it one way, run round the other, get away, and I'm one-on-one with Van der Sar, literally 10 seconds after they
after
get the goal
2-1,
back into
yeah,
after 2-1.
Yeah.
And then I
and
put...
And it's on your...
strong foot. Mm. Total confidence that you were gonna score, and I put it wide, and that was, you know, that, again, it's football, isn't
pitch.
It? Pitch. Yeah, playing the pitch.
It's bobbled, right?
Yeah.
You set that up really well about 4 or 5 minutes ago.
Yeah.
Hats off to you, Mr. Bottles.
Exactly what it was. Exactly
Fantastic.
What it was.
The pitch, and I walked right into that.
But yeah, that's the thing. You look back in your career, you could have had big moments like that. I should have scored. I definitely should have scored. And then that allowed them to gain a bit of momentum off the back of that. And Van Bronckhorst scored a goal, a bit of a deflection, actually.
Big deflection, but yeah. From range, so he's got no chance. The crowd have
gone
mad. No,
it was actually Alan Kelly was in that night.
Alan
Kelly was in goal that night, yeah. Shea tells a great story about how he was dropped before that game. He thought he'd have been starting, and he was. I don't think he was even on the bench that night, Shea. I think he hadn't been playing. He'd had a few injuries at the start of the season, I think it was, or through the pre-season. So because that game was at September, I don't know if he played. Shea said he was raging. Shea was the angriest man when he didn't play or when he didn't get things his own way. Shea was the sort of lad at a club, if he gets dropped for 1 week, I think he says it himself, I remember I've read it in his book, Bobby Robson drops him for a big game, his transfer request straight in. Like, he was that sort of lad. He had to play games. But
that, if you're a competitor and if you consistently produce, that's only a demonstration of how...
Yeah. I think that's the misconception from a lot of people. It's like, you know, when someone, like, say, Shea put a transfer, because imagine the Geordies, they'd have been slaughtering, wouldn't they?
Of course.
And it's like, oh, how can you want to walk away from this club and everything? But it's not that. It's nothing to do with money or anything like that. He wanted to play games. Mm. He's thinking, they're snubbing me here. This is a total rejection. I want to play games. Puts a transfer request in. And that was the... I remember it around that time. But anyway, Shea... Sorry, I'm going off on a bit of a tangent there. But yeah, he was dropped for that game. And Shea then was in and out maybe through that group. And then finally then, you know, certainly in the latter stages of that qualification campaign, he got himself in and then he was a regular then for a long time.
So given that this is our sort of bookends that I want to do, you go through the rest of the group, as I say, two really big performances against Portugal.
Yeah, we got those back-to-back. We didn't lose away in Amsterdam or in Lisbon. So we get two massive results to start with. We played really well over there in Portugal as well against that game. And I say it before, I think one of the best individual performances I've ever seen was Rui Costa. Rui Costa in Dublin was just sensational. He was
Describe him for those who aren't old enough to have seen him play. Describe that elegant Portuguese midfielder.
Oh, he was just... I mean, I was directly up against Figo that day. So I'm going a bit further ahead of myself here. But the game in Dublin, they battered us. Portugal were brilliant. Figo was very good. Ian Hart would have been marking him. He'd have been a right winger, but he would have been reliant upon me to get back and help out as much as I can. So invariably, I'd have spent 80 minutes of that game trying to get back helping Harty out because he didn't want to get...
What was your role in a situation like that against Figo? Is it closing up inside so he can't come in off Harty? Or?
Trying to come wrong side, essentially, yeah. So I think I would have always been a very good communicator on the pitch and how I would have got, whether I was playing at fullback or whether I was playing in front of me. So you try and give Harty a little bit of guidance, show him into me, I'm coming on your right, I'm coming from, whatever it would be. If I'm in front of Harty, obviously he can see the angle that I'm trying to come at. But if he can't see me and I'm maybe coming from his inside, just to try to give him that communication look, I've got your back, Show him into me. I'm inside you here now. Show him into me. And so Harty then would obviously angle of approach, get his body around it, show him into me. And we had a good understanding like that, Harty and me. We did. I used to love playing with him simply because of his quality. He had the best quality that I'd ever seen in a fullback. Every ball he'd give you was perfect.
You're talking about his quality with the ball.
Yeah.
Which not every fullback is asked to do. He was a very, very... He could have easily played old inside left.
I think
or
if he was quicker
in midfield.
If Harty was quicker, if he had a little bit more pace,
Xavi.
Xavi
was never quick. Busquets isn't quick.
Yeah, but as a fullback though, I'm talking about
he could have played midfield.
Yeah, he probably could have done.
At least my argument, because I thought he was a fabulous footballer.
Could argue he's technically our best player. I would think, yeah. You probably argue. Him and Roy certainly would have been the two.
That's great.
Because left foot was sensational, but his right foot was also brilliant as well. So he had two good feet. He was good in the air. He used to get the odd goal as well, certainly when he was attacking corners and things like that as well. That's if he wasn't actually taking them. But also, I just mentioned before, if he had his pace of his uncle, say, if he had the pace of Gary, I think you had one of the best around. I think he would have gone on and played. He could have played for Real Madrid. He could have played for Barcelona. He was that good. He was just a brilliant, brilliant footballer, technically as good as you would like to say.
He played at least a Champions League quarter. I think he
semi,
played a Champions
League semi. I think you're right, that Valencia game.
Okay, so the Figo that you encounter, who's going to be Golden Ball, who's going to be a Champions League winner at Real Madrid, when I picture him and you try to describe what he had to people, and Ferguson always said that if he was to sell Beckham, Figo was the only person that he could have imagined taking that right wing beat. His distribution was very good, and he struck the ball very cleanly, scored lots of goals, his crossing was brilliant. But you talked about you and Chris Waddle, and if I picture Figo now, there was a slight lean forward and hunch to his shoulders. Yeah. Was there things in his game you recognised from your game as a kid?
Yeah, a little bit of that. I think the one thing that maybe stood out, if you're asking me little things about his game, he had a John Robertson drag. That's exactly what Figo had. He used to take it from his right to his left, so he'd be thinking he'd be going on the outside, and he had an almighty drag where he'd drag it right across you, and he could do it off his left and off his right foot. Excellent at both ways. You can see, you can imagine when he's one-on-one in a wide area, he didn't know which foot he was going to cross with, because he was so agile, great movement, so graceful with his movement, he could drag it onto either foot. but he didn't have pace. He wasn't a pacey player that's going to run away from you. That's maybe you look at someone like Beckham where you'd think, yeah, you could maybe draw those sort of comparisons. He wasn't a player that was going to run away from you. So,
but he didn't need a lot of space.
Yes.
To whip.
Yes. He had the ability to just open his feet out ever so slightly, and he'd cross it instantly like a Beckham, where you think, how has he got that past me? That's what he had.
Yeah. We were on Rui Costa, thought. That's a beautiful Figo description. But
no, he did.
Rolls Royce of midfield.
But you start to see him as well. Again, I certainly don't think he didn't have as big an influence as Rui Costa did that day. But you know, when you watch someone and you see them, you're up against them, and you're coming off, it's class. Mm. Class. That's your thing. You know, you shake his hand after the game, and you're like, yeah, he's total class. But Rui Costa was just, he was the most elegant footballer I've ever seen on a pitch. He used to glide past players. He could go off either foot. He could shoot. He could head. Brave. He could take a tackle. And I saw him, because, you know, obviously, he's coming to Dublin. He's coming into our backyard. And we've got, probably would have been Breeny. Probably would have been, perhaps would be Kenny Cunningham, Steve Staunton maybe. And they're going to rough him up. Rui Costa's playing as a number 10. But he's going to also be coming up against, he's going to be pushing on to try to get up against the two centre-halves as well. And he can take it. And yet he's still got the ability as well to get himself half a yard, to pick passes out, opening his shoulder out in ways where he knows if it's a Figo that's on his right-hand side or whoever coming up on the left-hand side, he knows where they are before that ball's even coming to him. And you've seen that. You've watched enough of that type of play with the calibre of plays that you've seen over the years where it's just happens like that. It's a split second. And sometimes they don't even need to take the touch. The pass is away, and then he's away in space. You're following the ball, and then all of a sudden he's off your shoulder.
What just happened?
He just had ways. And I just remember that day in Dublin. It was a lovely day, and we were poor, actually. We didn't get to the level that we got through the group. Roy got us a draw. Roy was immense that day. Roy, probably maybe Roy's best game, I'd maybe argue, that day, because it was almost as if he's a one-man team for us that day. He got us a point. And it was a huge point for us in the end, actually. But Rui Costa stood out. I just watching him and just being in awe. And again, he wasn't necessarily in my vicinity. He wasn't anywhere near me, really. But he was the topic of conversation within our dressing room after the game. Wow, what a player he is! And well, as I said, like they ended up topping the group then.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
But the reason you go through, given that they top, although they top by goals,
yeah,
because you tied on 24 points, is this this nuts game? I mean, crazy game. I don't know what you feel about it in retrospect, but I mean, if I can, as a Scot, we're very used to sort of brave failure. We're very used to producing performances that shouldn't happen against big teams, and then not having the savvy at Hampden Park to handle a situation. And there are moments in Dublin that look a little bit like that because Holland have their tails up.
Yeah.
They don't play anything like Amsterdam. They're much more aggressive and confident. And as a group, and you'll tell us about going down to 10, you don't look as assured.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
So set the scene and were there nerves coming into it? What were the attitudes? What was the manager saying? What was the group's form coming into that?
It was a beautiful day. Sun was shining. You can paint the picture on that sort of side of it. So it was you don't get many days like that in Dublin, but it was a beautiful day. Packed Lansdowne Road. As good as atmosphere as you're going to witness before a game. Crowd in full voice. And there was a real change, I think, I think around that time as well, saying how the games were being reported, because we were starting to see a much bigger build-up to the matches. You know, with something, say, living here now, you start to get a bit of a feeling for it now and how the games are built up from a month out or 3 or 4 weeks out, whatever it would be. We arrive in Dublin and we're front page. You know, next game we've got Holland, and you've seen all the you know, win tickets to the big showdown. Radio's on, TV's on, whatever it is. The only topic is that game against the Dutch in Dublin. So you're starting then. You're immersed in it. Then you're around the hotel. You're getting the paper in the morning, and you're reading about. You're reading what's being said. What's the team going to be? Some journals picking. Whoever, you know, you can imagine the 1 to 11, the whoever it would. Some of the journals favour one, some of them favour another.
They
whoever
do
it would be.
Look at that, don't they?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. That's the one thing that when Brian Kerr became manager, he ended up taking a lot of the newspapers out and just maybe leave one or two in there, whatever it would be. You can't. It's the way it is, isn't it? I think it's the way it is. I think psychologically, I think Brian maybe saw something that would be affecting us. But I think in general, yeah. I think then you start to realise how big these games are, and we analyse the game constantly around the Irish team and things like that. And yes, we probably don't have the players to an extent now.
We're probably harsh
on our players at times as well. But when we're playing for our club, we're nobodies. When we're playing for our country here, we're everything to everybody. So that real intensity around the squad, that feeling of this game is everything. Mm-hmm. So it's only going to lead to nerves. You're not going to be human if you don't have these sort of nerves around these sort of big games. Good nerves, real bit of, you know, a bit of, I don't know, that little knot in your tummy around these games. But you're feeling that for Monday. It's not Saturday you're feeling this. You're feeling that for Monday, Tuesday. Every training session, every team meeting that you've got, every, you know, the bits of video analysis that we could have done in those days. We wouldn't have done much because we wouldn't have had the technology there. You're immersed in this little bubble, yeah, but you're starting to realise this is it. This is make or break now this weekend. And I'd say, yeah, I think some of those bigger games, I don't think that's really spoken about at times, and how nervous or how much the players can be affected by these bigger games, because there was so much riding on it, and we were on the verge of something very special, but we had this great team, this brilliant team in Holland coming to Dublin, who, of course, they were wounded from the result that we got over there in Amsterdam anyway.
So there's negative tension that some people burn energy during the week without noticing it.
Definitely.
That they should be using, you know, in those first 20 minutes or in the last 10. There's nerves that sort of grow during the week and really only start to hit you on Friday night. But also there are some, and I don't know where you rank and how your teammates are, there's some who are just like, this is what it's all about. Give me more of this.
Yeah.
Give me less of I'm Joe Nobody at the club. Give me exactly this. Put Ireland's responsibility on my shoulders? Yeah, no problem. Yeah. Give me more of that. Robbie would be one of those.
Definitely, definitely.
I feed off it.
Yeah, I'd never seen a player like him come in at 17. No nerves whatsoever. This is where I belong. I belong here with Robbie when he first came in. Still probably the best I've ever seen at 17. And again, I played with Wayne at 17. But Robbie was just a different breed. Just an amazing talent, but also mentally so strong, like nothing would faze him, absolutely nothing would faze him. And he was just, this is me, as you say there, maybe give me this is what I want, this is me. And maybe probably Roy had that maybe mentality as well to an extent. But what I would say and what I would argue as well is that playing for Ireland was my Champions League. Playing for Ireland was everything. I didn't get the opportunity to play Champions League football, the very best, the pinnacle of club football. So I wasn't around these big games. I never played playing for Man United or Liverpool or whoever it would be, playing in these big Champions League nights. So this was everything. This was almost like, this is what your whole career has been set up for, that you're on the verge of qualifying for a World Cup if you beat this great team here in Dublin. And as you say before, we've had so many, over the years, we've had so many near misses. Ah, what an effort. Great effort, lads. Well done. But you've not been able to get over that final hurdle and go on and do it. And that was certainly in my mind, I felt, because we were on the verge of something special, yeah.
So looking back to that Thursday, Friday, Saturday morning,
nerves,
if you can look at that, how did you react?
I would always try and get some sort of consistency in the build to every game, whether that would be food wise, you know, all the little things that you've got to do to fit in, to fit around the game, should I say, to you know, to get yourself prepared for it. But these sort of games are different. These games are immeasurably different because you go for a walk out for a coffee, you're around the hotel, and the level of appreciation for the team from our supporters is just, it has always been brilliant. It's been incredible, the level of appreciation that we've got. And the only thing that they want to talk about is this game. And it's understandable, yeah, you know full well, because you've been reading about it all week. But it comes down to this one big day at Lansdowne on the Saturday.
So you handled it, can you remember?
Yeah, I think I did. I don't think, I certainly didn't play my best game for Ireland.
It's gone, though. That memory, that tension is gone from you now. You're reaching for a memory.
It probably has. I do remember that the tension was there all week. That's one thing I do. But I probably remember more in the build-up than I actually do around the game, because once the game then does go, it's kind of, you're just fully focused on the game. You're focused on what's happening around you. So I think that tension does leave you. I think it does. And that always did leave me when the game did actually start. Yeah.
Did you feel you were being battered on the day?
Yes, I did. I felt as though that we were certainly getting overrun. We were nowhere near of the level from the game in Amsterdam. Nowhere near that. Absolutely nowhere near that. So that was the thing that we were up against it. Overmars was playing brilliantly on the left-hand side for them. And, you know, famously, Gary Kelly got the two yellows and got sent off just after half-time. That's the thing that was happening throughout. We were getting overrun. We were not necessarily giving loads of chances away, but we were giving a couple of good, really good chances away throughout the game. They were creating things.
Kluivert, Van Nistelrooy.
Yeah.
Kluivert particularly.
Yeah.
Was sharp that day.
Yes,
had this collision with, I think this time, not Alan, but Shea.
Yeah, Shea was playing, yeah.
There were a lot of mistakes.
Yeah.
From your team.
Yeah, Richard Dunne was brilliant that day. That was almost the beginning of him as well. Richard Dunne was so good. I think Richard was only 19 at the time. 19 or 20. He was certainly under 21s. And he came in. That would have been probably the biggest game that he would have played in. And he almost single-handedly marshalled the defence that day. Because he would have, as you said, that day with Van Nistelrooy, yes. There was Cliver, yes. There was Pierre Van Hooijdonk and Jimmy Floyd.
Mm.
All four, I think all four on the pitch at one stage as well. And Richard Dunne was having to try to keep all four of them at bay at times.
At one stage with 10 men in green because Gary had been sent off.
Yeah, exactly.
Should that goal have come, though? I mean, can you remember the elation?
I tell you what, I do think you remember, you're going through that game, you're down to 10 men, you're thinking, right, we'd take a draw now. We would take a draw. Take a 0-0 or whatever it would be, because it still would have been a decent result for
don't
us
get
going
beat.
Forward. Yeah, exactly, don't get beat. That was probably the mentality. And then you have the chance to get forward, and Stevie Finnan got himself in a great position. Another one that we had was underrated. Another player, you may be saying he can reel off all these names to you, but a brilliant player, Stevie Finnan. Brilliant defender. And he created, you know, that moment for Jason. Jason's life's built around that goal now. He loved to remind you of that as well.
he handles it brilliantly. And he's listen, Jason.
But it was
awesome.
A great finish. If you look at the technique on the goal as well, it was taken like a he struck it like a free kick. Yeah. He gets the ball up and down. You know that again with the technique of that one. If you get it wrong, you just sky it. But if anyone sees it, he's wrapped his foot over the ball, so he's hit it as like a free kick, like you're trying to get it up and down over a wall. He hit it brilliantly.
So there's a parabola to it.
Exactly. And again, he's beat Van der Sar again for the second time in the group, and it was a brilliant finish. Yeah, great goal. And the moment was, I mean, it was, yeah. I think then the sense that, you know, the noise in at Lansdowne that day was, oh, it was unbelievable. And the amount of people I've spoke to since, yeah, I was there, you know, half the country was there by all accounts at that game. But it's the game that's synonymous with Mick McCarthy's reign, that game, definitely.
Probably makes living in Dublin, which you do now, that little bit easier. We're going to wind to a halt because of your time, not because of my enthusiasm. But there's two subjects I want to gently cover. I was going to ask you about how you'd have handled Saipan if you'd been the manager. I don't believe you'd have handled it the same way as
I think you
Mick did.
Do you know what? Yes, probably it's fair that I probably answer what you're saying. Yes, I probably would have handled it differently. I think it's always better in hindsight as well.
But I think that, I don't know if Mick's ever admitted this or if he even thinks it, but I do think that looking back, he could certainly have managed differently. And that's not the route I want it to go down. You know, with Roy there, I've heard you saying, I feel like we'd have done semi-finals at least.
Easy, yeah.
And you've used the word, you've just used the word easily.
Yeah, I think we would have done. I think we'd have topped our group. I do think that. And then again, it's quite bullish when you think about it. I do think we'd have topped the group.
This is a forum for your opinion.
Yeah,
so
I think we'd have put Spain out. I do think we'd have put Spain out if that had been the case. Everybody knows we probably should have anyway. But it's in general, I think we would have, we certainly.
So then you fancy South Korea?
Yeah, I think of course we would have done. Definitely would have done.
You've twice said, well, once in a previous interview, at least.
Yeah.
Then you said easily.
I think...
So what do you think that Ireland were with Roy Keane and playing the way you played, were finalists?
Yeah, I do. I do, yeah. And again, it's you know, you always look at it, you know, it's everything can change and it runs its course for a reason and all these sort of things. But if I look at how we played and how much, what our collective strengths were and the qualities, individual qualities that we had as well mixed in with that, we should have done, yeah. We should have got to the quarters as it is.
Yeah.
And we should have got to the quarters. And I do feel as though we would have had a great chance of topping our group originally anyway. And I think as it turns out, we would have ended up playing a Germany in the semi. We played them. I would have fancied us because it simply we would have had experience of playing against them in the past.
So it's an Ireland Brazil final. Now you've made a good case. No, I'm not yeah. teasing or mocking.
Yeah.
You're not doing the Scottish thing about won the tournament before you've even made it there. You're making a reasonable, something that's on your mind occasionally.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. It is.
We could have played in a World Cup final because Korea looked beatable in that respect against a side that you should have put out Spain.
Yes.
And Germany, you played in the group and it was 1-1. It was a late goal from Robbie, but you feel that you had their measure.
Yeah, we did, yeah. I thought throughout, they got an early goal. We conceded early goals against, we conceded a first half goal against Cameroon. We conceded early goal against Germany in the second game. And we conceded early goal against Spain as well. We conceded early goals, but we had enough about us. I think it helps in many respects as well that we did concede those early goals because we knew then that we had to maybe play a little bit.
Yeah.
And it certainly helped us, I think it did. And we got ourselves more than back into every one of those games. And then by the last 20, 30 minutes of every one of those games, we were out playing them.
And I thought I detected this feeling about I could have played in the World Cup final in previous interviews that I listened to. Is that a bugbear?
Again, we'd have Kenny Cunningham, who'd be a regular contributor on our show as well.
I listen to him a lot.
Yeah, Kenny be on. And again, when we speak about it, it's totally genuine. When we talk about the Saipan incident, we talk about it. It's sadness how it all happened. I think every single one of us, knowing what we know now, would have done things differently. We certainly would have all done it differently.
So from a player point of view, some of you might have spoken up, or taken the boss aside, or taken Roy aside,
most definitely,
or something of that order.
You know, it's all in hindsight. What could you have done differently? And I think when we say Mick feels as though yes, he probably in hindsight could have done things differently. But in general, I think he feels as though he's right for his ultimate decision that he made. But I think as a squad, as a player, as a group of players together, I think we would have all done it differently. You know, we were all experienced enough, or we had enough experience about us within that squad where we could have actually done something differently.
Were some of them too scared to just say to Roy, take a step back?
I tell you, looking back at the moment as it was when it was all happening, though, Graham, it was just one of those moments where it was between two guys going head to head, and it was just happening in front of our eyes, and it was kind of it was almost like you're just letting it go in many respects.
Kind of like a bar room.
Yeah,
it was two alpha males going, I'm not backing down.
Yeah, it was a bit like that. That's what it was, and it was. You look back at it and you think things could have been done differently. Yes, we know that.
You're a good man, somebody who's made the most of his talents, even if those talents might have taken you, I don't know, to Liverpool or further or whatever.
I think a family level. I think that's what it is, yeah.
It's not what people tell me, that there was greater ability than people realise. The Champions League would have benefited from having you there. And aside from just this sounding a bit gushing, I think we've talked to somebody who's been a great representative of football, and I think it's shown in this chat. Hopefully you enjoyed that big interview, which was first released as an exclusive to our socios 12 months ago. If you'd like to get these interviews on the first day that they're available, it's time for you to join us, to become a socio, and for only £2.99 a month, you will get an exclusive big interview plus regular mini documentaries, not only all ad-free, but all featuring me and bringing you interesting, funny, and sometimes scandalous things from Spanish football. Go to patreon.com/Graham Hunter to unlock our entire archive. That means that once you join, you will have a treasure trove of interviews with funny, elite, interesting, revelatory, top-class footballers. By joining us,
You will help support this independent podcast. You will help to keep us on the road, interviewing people and sending that content for your delectation. If you go to the gym, you'll be slimmer. If you've got a dog, he or she will thank you. If you've got a TV, you can turn it off and listen to this instead.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.